Silent Waves contains material that may be distressing for some listeners. If any of the content is triggering for you, please refer to the support organisations in our show notes. Act 7.
I'd been carrying shame within me since I'd been abused, but knowing about Ralph birthed new shame of having him as a father.
Now, what are you going to sing?
Happy
Christmas. What about jingle bells?
Jingle bells.
One, two, three, four.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Hey!
I'd spent 23 years only appreciating his good. He was my protector. Now I could see that the thing he protected me from the most was himself.
He clearly worshipped you. But I think that, you know, there were clearly two sides to Ralph, weren't there?
There was the dichotomy of Ralph.
Yeah.
Here's Uncle Brian.
Well, you know, there was the great person, and you'd be struggling to find someone that didn't like him and enjoy his company and feel charmed. He was very charming, Ralph. But then there was the dark side of him, the underbelly. The underbelly of the other side wasn't just a thing that popped up here and there. It was clearly a whole life that took its own course.
Yes, yes. It's like he was living, that's exactly it, these parallel lives.
Yeah.
And the dark went out.
Well, it did, and it took over.
It took over
all your lives. It took over your lives, all of your lives.
I had two sides as well. And like my dad's, my dark streak was taking over my life. The feeling of anger was a constant, an undercurrent, always festering just below the surface.
To be honest, I can't really remember the first time they hit me because it was like so many times.
My name is Raquel O'Brien and this is the final act of Silent Waves. My pent-up rage would erupt behind closed doors, but only when alone with my partner, Marlon.
Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you angry? Are you ready for do this?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Every time you would talk about it, you would get so angry, and that's the time that you would hit me, and you would turn your trauma onto me. Even though I had nothing to do with it, I was there to support you, to give you force. And from all of the years, it's something that you've been working since we got together. You've improved so much, so much. About your cousin, you can just like have a conversation with me and like not hear me and not, I don't know, see me as your cousin. When it comes about your dad, you do still get angry at me. So I think like, you know, when he comes to you, you still like do all of those things to me, hit me, just get all of this anger out, just throw it in my face.
When Marlon says my dad comes to me, he's referring to when I have my rage blackouts. It's so extreme that it's almost like I'm possessed.
To use an old saying, it feels like there's a tiger in the room, and our body responds as if there's a tiger in the room, and we look around and there is no tiger, but the tiger's in our head.
This is Graham Taylor, esteemed trauma psychologist.
Encoded information, sights and sounds and smells and emotions and body sensations, but also we're meaning-making creatures, and so events happen and we make sense of them. We might be told by a perpetrator that this is happening to us because we're a bad person. And of course, as children, we don't have the capacity to argue that. So people come away from trauma, not just with emotions and body reactions, but also deeply entrenched thoughts about themselves. And then, of course, we go and live those thoughts out, mm-hmm. and often results in a perpetuating of trauma.
During my episodes, the more Marlon would try to calm me down, the more powerless I would feel and the more I would attack. No matter how much I promised myself that I would never hit him again, each time I did, it stung more. It became a vicious cycle that was taking a serious toll on our relationship, but more importantly, on Marlon.
Tell you this, like about 2 weeks ago when we had a fight. It's like so many fights that we have had. I always feel like you're always misunderstanding anyway. And you told me you wanted to kill me so many times. You know, I was scared of you for the first time. It just like came all to my mind. I was like, oh my God, did I get like really like, I should really want to do that? And you came and like, you were like come upstairs. And I was like, get away from me. Get away from me. I really thought you wanted to kill me and you were ready for it.
Well, I didn't, but I said it.
Yeah.
I'd been excusing the abuse I was inflicting on Marlon because of the abuse I'd endured.
I've had enough. I've had enough of it. And it's something that I'm still working on to explain myself so you can understand that. And I think you are getting it now. And that's why I'm not going to give up now. But I can't forget about myself to live your life.
You can't.
I've said to you, even with a breakup, I will always be there as a friend. But I'm going to be honest with myself because I've lost so, so many things. My passions in doing theater, singing, all of that, to give you force.
See, I didn't even remember that I'd hit you as much as I'd hit you. And it's so bad that we normalize that.
I couldn't even count, you know. Sorry for being, like, you know, very honest.
Don't apologize.
I don't want to, like, make you feel bad. I'm just, like, not lying to myself and being really honest to the person that I love.
Before Marlon, Mum was on the receiving end of my rage.
So when you were, in that sense, insulting me, I had to step back and realize that you were hurting and the only person that you could hurt really was me.
I knew I had to put up with your anger.
And that's something that I'm trying to overcome. And dealing with so much self-hate, and I know that I wasn't an angry child, and I know when my anger kicked in, and it's something I have to overcome, and it's not something I'm proud of, and my anger is very destructive, and I've hurt people I love. Every time you say something, you can't take it back, and I've said the most horrible things. I've hit Marlon over 100 times. I've hit you. I've punched Matt. I've chipped his tooth, and it's me fighting back from someone who took away every single bit of my self-worth, and he really broke me, and I feel like all my anger was born because I didn't fight back. And that's why I feel like I want to fight against men, because I got so much stripped away from me. And it to the end, he still probably to this day says he never did anything and he nearly ruined my life. And I still have shame because of what he did to me. And repeatedly, I couldn't punch him. I wanted to, but I couldn't punch him. And then Dad happened and I couldn't punch Dad. I couldn't release my anger on the people that I wanted to. So instead it gets put on the people I love the most.
I needed to release the compounded trauma of Leonardo and my father. It was the only way for me to break the chain of abuse.
Tomorrow morning we'll see if any of those wishes came true.
Each of my family members has to come to terms with our shared history. We all have our own version of the story, and our own journey of processing it. Matt and I are my father's only biological children. When we say dad, we mean the same thing.
You know, it's easy for us to focus on the negativity, and it's good to focus on that, but in terms of moving forward, we have to recognize that it's not just evil, it's not all doom and gloom. There was some good things that he didn't, like there was still that light in him. Everyone has, you know, two sides. So you need to look past that darkness eventually, aside to feel anger, but eventually look past it and be like, you know what, you were a soul, you were a human being, did try and do some good. So let's give you a tick there, but yeah, you got a lot of crosses, but...
In essence, it's easier to forgive a man who gave a lot to us through our childhood, and ultimately he was our father, and do you think that makes it easier to forgive? Do you think you would be at this point if he was alive?
I would even say that I haven't forgiven him yet. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've forgiven him. Mm. I still carry a lot of resentment to the dude. This is all, you know, theoretical at this point in time. So I guess in terms of forgiving, it's more obvious that forgiveness is what needs to happen for us individually to move on, because there's no other option.
I agree. We do need to forgive.
Until you address it, it's just going to eat away inside of you. It's not good to harbour feelings of hatred and resentment. It's more of a personal thing. Yeah, you got to forgive yourself a bit as well, or relieve yourself of these emotions.
Yeah.
In order to feel free.
I wondered if Gabriel, the eldest, could come to terms with how much he was manipulated by a man he saw as his dad.
When you did understand that level of manipulation, because it really was at the subconscious level, you know, and especially someone like me who I didn't have a relationship with my biological father, I looked up to him as a father. You know, I was always looking for that approval or whatever you want to call it, a strong male role model, to take that wanting from a child and then manipulate it for your own purpose. You know, that's where that anger stemmed from. So I think initially when I was processing and dealing with this manipulation, it was just like, okay, yep, that happened. I get it. Okay, happened to me. Cool. How am I feeling about it? Okay, I'm okay. It really made me think about, okay, well, what had happened to him for him to be like that? And so that was the initial part, but that really that expression of anger that came later, that was how that was processed. You know, I was like, you know what, fuck you. You did manipulate me. I often wonder what would happen if that never had happened. Like, what would life be like? But you can't stay on those thoughts too long, because in some weird way, those things that have happened to you shape you in a way that it's odd, but you probably wouldn't want it any other way. It's like, well, I feel like I'm stronger for it.
With Glenn, my father's foster son from his previous marriage, Dad had taken a victim of domestic violence and then continued the chain of abuse by sexually molesting him. When we spoke, Glenn had only recently broken his silence. I wondered where he was at with his journey.
It was only after I'd kind of fallen pretty much on the bones of my ass. I was living in a tent on a hill in the middle of nowhere. And I rang the department and said, look, well, you know, I used to be a ward of the state. I need some help here. I need to talk to someone. I'm losing my shit. And so I went and spoke to a counsellor. And the first time in my entire life, I sat down and just let it all go. But I walked out of there feeling fucking fantastic. And the next day I got up and I thought, wow, I feel lighter. I feel better. I've shared something. And I realised that the reason that I've always felt really disconnected is because I'm not being honest with people. I'm not telling people who I actually am. To me personally, the thing that really bothers me is not being able to be honest. So being back in the family and not being able to be honest because I feel bad to say Ralph was not the person you think he is didn't make sense to me, and I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
But I should have straight away. I was also thinking about that whole thing about, you know, you don't speak ill of the dead.
See, this is a huge thing. This is a huge thing that it's like a lot of the time honest expression and honest conversations are halted because you're like, well, this person's no longer here to defend himself.
Mm. He needs to hear that we're actually happy to chat about it.
Exactly.
And, you know, end of the day, mate, hey, you fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done.
You know,
and we're going to free ourselves from that, you know.
And maybe if we free ourselves, you can free yourself and just fuck off and go and enjoy the afterlife. Like, stop fucking hanging around being bad energy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need it. We're happy moving forward.
For Horitia, my father was instrumental in suppressing his black identity. This created a void that separated him from our family.
Not only did I not feel safe to be all of myself within the society that I was socialized with, I didn't feel safe within my own family home. People in society have been conditioned to hate themselves. I was conditioned to hate myself. But the hardest thing is that people within my own family unit hated the black part of me, you know? So where if you're in a family where there were black people, even though you internalize a self-hatred, there's still an understanding of that. But for me, no one in the family could understand that internalized self-hatred, and therefore I couldn't receive the love for that. When you're in the dominant group of a society, you're educated to be told that you're the reason why civilization exists. You know, like all of the heroes look like you. When you can assimilate into that dominant group, you can derive an identity that's rooted in success and being great. But when you fall outside of that group, which is what I did, you know, my identity was sort of parts of me had things imposed on me, and it sort of led to a point where I was in a position where I would allow people to call me names that were derogatory, nicknames that were derogatory, jokes, is because of the lack of the knowledge of self. But as I began to find the knowledge of self through study of history, through reconnecting with my father and understanding who I am in relation to the historical context of my people, well, then no one could tell me who I was.
Horitia is on his own journey of reclaiming his identity by unpacking the role of racism in his life.
We have to start by saying, what is racism? And racism is misunderstood by a lot of people. Racism is a system that is synonymous with white supremacies. And so in my opinion, the correct question when someone says, did you experience racism, is yes, I lived in racism. I lived in a system that was built on the genocide, attempted genocide, the rape, the murder, the biological warfare of Indigenous peoples, including people throughout the whole continent of Africa. People in Brazil were affected living in a system of racism, and here in Australia. So absolutely, I experienced racism from when I came out of my mother's womb.
Up until recently, I'd put my father on a pedestal. The illusion of who I thought he was warped my perceptions of my mother. Now, with clarity, I can see the power in her resilience and compassion.
I see a person like him, a very dark, dark person. This world is full of people like that. So I need to bring my light there, you know? And the only way that I can is actually sending my light of love to him, to just project my light to this darkness. I'm already in another journey. It's not a journey of just focusing on what he did wrong, because what he did, we can't undo it. We can't undo anymore. We can only do the best of ourselves to make this world a better place, because it's not only one Ralph. There is other people who are like him, and there are other kids who can be victims too. The scars are there, will always be there, but it's just memories, you know? It's not something that is dominating you, that's trying to take over your life. we should not give anything or anyone that power to dominate our lives. So we are all the same. We cannot give that power. And that's something that I realized, you know, because I did give that power to someone too. And you did the same.
For me, the greatest block I had in the way of transcending my past was my shame complex. The shame from being sexually abused, the shame from having a sex offender as a father, and the shame of inflicting physical abuse on my partner. These threads were tangled as one. Unresolved traumas remain embedded in your psyche like landmines. You never know what sound, smell, or moment can trigger them. I thought opening up conversations with my family would heal me, but instead I was provoking my post-traumatic stress disorder. Convulsions, weight loss, and vivid flashbacks. 6 months into the journey, I found myself at the bottom of a pit.
You actually were confronting what had bothered you for a long time. So when you decide to confront, it's like your enemy. It's overwhelming. And that was showing up in also in your physical, mental, and emotional bodies.
Shame anchors you in your own experience, your own mind. You can't escape yourself. Through personal psychology sessions and interviewing the experts for this project, I gained an understanding of how misplaced my shame was. As a child, there was never a question of consent. I was groomed, manipulated, and coerced. My father's sins were not my burden to carry. When my dad was alive, my family acted as an institution and abuse went unchecked. We were silenced by the image we were taught to uphold. Through the conversations we have had over the past 18 months, my family has shattered our facade.
I think it was just a family thing, a sense of catharsis. In hindsight, we were all blissfully unaware of, we were almost living life with our eyes closed, in the sense that this was a structure, we just played a part of it. We knew that as being reality. And as soon as that crumbled, then we were all able to find our own unique individuality.
In you sharing the story, I feel like now I can do so freely because I now have almost within the family, I have my pain can now be validated because it paints context to who Ralph was. And I've been saying it for quite a while, you know, like it allows me perfect launching pad to be able to say this was the environment that I was in that created the circumstances that I had to live.
You know, within the story of Silent Waves, there's individual wounds, but there's also a collective wound. I think has been a great journey, a worthwhile journey of deeper discovery, not only for ourselves, but, you know, I'm sure it's going to open the doors for others to look at their own family dynamics and see, okay, well, what is bubbling under the surface here? It's been great because it's allowed everyone to have their say and their perspective from what happened and how it happened, and also allows the others to really step into the perspective of those that we really didn't know much about.
Open and honest conversations are vital if we are to uncover the nuances of abusive relationships and free ourselves from perpetuating cycles that span generations.
When you start doing the podcast, yeah, then it shifts because then we are able to talk and cry and explain to you so that the relationship is where it is now. We are best friends forever, BFF. Now, you are absolutely, even your eyes sparkles. And, you know, it's really, really amazing to see. And every time I see you, I actually give thank you, you know, for whatever the energies, God, or that you are here and then we can discuss that. And your strength has helped me to be, even more strong because, you empowered me.
I'd taken ownership of what had happened to me, but my past trauma did not excuse my abusive behaviour. I needed to give Marlon the opportunity to hold me accountable.
As I said before, everyone has a beautiful thing to give, and that's a lesson that I've learned and you have taught me. I feel very confident. I don't talk much. This is so good. This is incredible. I feel so good talking about it, you know, speaking my mind and being able to talk about all of that to the person that did all of that to me without fighting and being young, which we are. I feel like we're doing very well and I'm really proud of ourselves.
Thank you. We'll slow you down. So please leave everything behind. If a mask like this appears from above you, pull it down firmly to start a supply of oxygen. Quickly put it over your mouth and nose and breathe normally. Keep the mask in place by fitting and tightening the strap and then help others around you.
January 5th, 2018, 11 p.m.
If it is required,
first time back to Perth since 2012, my court case. I never thought I'd go back to Perth, but no person or place should hold power over me. In Perth, I visited my childhood home, the bushland where my dad's body was found, and the Magistrates Court of Western Australia, the places that triggered my trauma. I rewrote their role in the narrative of my life. I no longer have trauma-provoked episodes. I stopped convulsing and lashing out in fits of rage. I stopped hitting Marlon. It's been over 9 months. The epidemic of familial sexual abuse remains taboo, under the preface that family business is private. This insidious silence has held us captive for too long. Our only escape is our voice. To all survivors, I urge you to take the first step on your journey to uncover your truth, to gain sovereignty over your story. Each time a survivor speaks out, our truth echoes in the ear of another. As a society, we have a responsibility to create the safe spaces in which our stories can be heard and validated. No longer will we be stigmatized for the actions of offenders. To my abuser, my cousin, Leonardo, I want you to know that I've forgiven myself. Finally, by sharing my story, I'm holding you accountable. In my way. On my terms. My name is Raquel O'Brien, and this is Silent Waves.
Hi, it's me, Raquel. As I said, each time a survivor speaks out, our truth echoes in the ear of another. If you've been moved by this series and value what I've shared, you can support me in the telling of my story tangibly by making a donation through our website, silentwavespodcast.com. I thank you.
If you've been enjoying listening to Silent Waves, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review to help spread the message. Silent Waves is created and produced by Raquel O'Brien and me, Georgina Savage, in partnership with Nearly Media. The show is hosted by Raquel, and I'm the editor. Music production by IMXO of Alt Music Group, with audio assistance by Lloyd Richards and Charlie Vonnox. Our graphic design is by Stacey Gugulis.